Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 218 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is April 23rd, 2012, the day after Earth Day, but we got a great show for you this week on the podcast talking about USC football. If you have any questions or comments, we love to hear from you. You can email us podcast@uscfootball.com, or if you want to leave us a voicemail, two options, call us 206-888-6755 or go to peristylepodcast.com, click on the left side of the page and leave us a voicemail there. We got Dan Weber coming up a little bit later on in the show. Got some USC questions for him. Talk about what the team's going to be doing over the next couple of months as they're getting ready for fall camp. Get all the updates there. We are not going to have Gerard Martinez on this week for recruiting. We have a ton of recruiting questions though, so those will be on a Trojan Blast podcast coming up either on Tuesday or Wednesday. But we do have Coach Harvey Hyde here in the first segment. We love to talk to the coach. What's going on, Coach? How you doing?
How are you doing, Ryan? I tell you, I apologize for all those cellular phones ringing in the background, but people are calling me and I forgot to turn them off. So I'll just be completely honest with you. I got to delay a game, march off 5 yards against me, and we'll get our segment going. But it's been a great week. I went to Vegas last week, had a chance to watch their spring game, which was on Saturday, and see a lot of friends and former players up there. And by the way, I want to mention this, and then they announced at that spring game, I'm very proud of this, I'm not trying to boast about this, but they are going to induct the team I coached in 1984 with Randall Cunningham and others on that team into the UNLV Hall of Fame. And that really made me proud to be a part of that team. It wasn't me. It was the coaches, it was the secretaries, it was the players, it was the community, everybody who supported us, and I'm really excited about that and for that team. So on October the 12th, we're going to have a big banquet in Vegas, and that's the game of their in-state rival against Nevada Reno, and the team will be honored there and honored at halftime, and it's just a great thing for this team to get, and I'm very proud of that. I don't mean to bring it up during an SC segment, but it's something that happened, and James Boyd, the quarterback that played, of course, came out of South Central and played at SC, is now on the Rebel football team. He was playing quarterback there. As you know, he left USC, went to West LA, graduated, and transferred to USC. And during the scrimmage up there on Friday, they had a scrimmage on Friday, I might have mentioned Saturday, he was playing defensive end. So he wasn't disgruntled about it. He said, I got my turns as far as a quarterback, and if I'm not going to play on offense, let me play somewhere on defense. So certainly looked physical, 6'5", about 250, looked great in the uniform. Didn't get a chance to watch him play that much, but people who follow USC football would like to know where some of these athletes go and how they're doing. So I thought I'd just throw that in.
Well, first of all, Coach, congratulations on being in the inducted into the Hall of Fame. That's like a great honor, and you're not taking as much credit you deserve for that. So you put that team together, and I think you deserve the credit. So congratulations on that. We all appreciate you having your insight here. Now you're Hall of Famer, so it's even better to have you on the podcast.
Not me, the whole team, okay? The whole team. Ryan, I'll even throw you in on that, okay?
Oh, thanks. Well, hey, I was inducted, this is no joke, like a few months ago to my high school Hall of Fame for our volleyball team. So my team back in 1989, so our team got inducted to the Hall of Fame. So it's not quite the same, Coach, but, you know, and I will take a lot of the credit for that. It was me. No, I'm just kidding. It was fun. So we're both Hall of Famers, Coach, just on different levels.
Well, it's just a great honor for those kids who put out and it all paid off, and they've all gone into the community and done so well. I was eating Thursday night up there in a restaurant, and I left, and I heard this bellowing voice, Coach! So I turned around, and I went back to the table, and here's Paul Godby, who came out of Rancho Cucamonga, was a tackle, rode into town on a motorcycle, 66290, played for us on that team. And he says, "Coach, you'll be very proud of me." And I said, I've always been proud of you, Paul. He says, "I got my BA," and I said, "Congratulations." He says, "I got my MA," I said, "Congratulations." He says, "Coach, you won't believe this." I said, "What, Paul?" He says, "I'm an elementary school teacher for 13 years now in the Las Vegas school district." I said, "Wow, has many parents come in and argued about the way you're teaching? I can imagine that teacher walking in his class or a family member walking in the classroom and seeing him standing there 66290 and saying, now, you know, I don't like the way you're teaching." But no, he loves what he does. He'll be a great administrator. He's excited about being a school teacher. And you just see this, you know. I saw another player at the scrimmage, Martin Cooper from L.A. City College, who played for us. He's now the chief engineer of the Bellagio. And there's others that are like that. I mean, what a responsibility. What a tremendous job to see these kids come out of Southern California, have an opportunity to get an education, play football, and then go on and get in the hotel management school or whatever they wanted to do in Las Vegas and be successful. It's just great. And I don't want to talk any more about this, but I'm so proud of these kids.
Well, congratulations again, Coach. We're really, really proud of you. And before we get into the segment, I wanted to thank our sponsor, Southern California Tickets. You can go to sctickets.com or call them 1-800-888-7287. If you need tickets for anything, Dodgers, Angels, you want to go Kings playoffs, you can check that out. Go to sctickets.com, and they will hook you up. And, Coach, we got a lot of stuff to get to. We're going to talk about the NFL draft a little bit. That's coming up this week. But we do have a couple of questions I thought we could go over first. Melvin wanted to know. He said he noticed in the spring, due to injuries, that there was very little, if any, tackling and live football, much like 2 years ago when depth was a concern. And then in all caps, so he's serious, Coach. He says, therefore, do you think the defense will react at the beginning of the season, knowing that Stanford is game number 3? How do you think the defense will react at the beginning of the season? He says, I asked this question looking back 2 seasons ago when there was no tackling and the 2010 defense was horrible for half of the season. Will the 2012 defense struggle before it becomes a strong point of this team?
Well, we had Monty Kiffin on at the spring game, and we asked him that question, and he says, hey, when we come back in the fall, we're going to be scrimmaging. We had that experience a year ago when we couldn't hit anybody. He says, when we come back in the fall, it's full go. Whether we have injuries or not, we've got to learn to play at the speed of the game. So I look for the defense and the offense to come back and go full speed. You might have some injuries, but when you think about injuries, you can't change what it takes to win because you're concerned more about injuries than becoming a great football team. So you got to go out and you got to play the game at the speed that the game is being played at. You got to learn to settle up. You got to learn to block people that are moving targets. So I anticipate them coming back in the fall and everything is full go. That's the only way you can get better. You've had your opportunities now to rehab and get yourself ready to play. I think they've had their opportunity now to find out in their mind who their backup quarterback is. I think Matt Barkley will get all the turns in the fall, get back in his rhythm, be ready to play. There won't be many rotations at different positions, and I think the positions are set. I think they'll just now utilize their players how they want to utilize them in certain formations and routes and running game and so on and get ready to play. So I think in the fall you come back and get after it. You don't come back and sit around and go through this thud stuff that you do because you've got some great things to live up to, and the only way you learn to play football and condition yourself is play at the speed of the game.
You know, it seemed to all change, Coach, after the Trey Madden injury, and it wasn't even a contact injury. I mean, he just went down without being touched at practice, making a cut, and went down and is going to be out for the season. It seemed that at that point, that's when Lane Kiffin kind of put the brakes on and said, okay, we're going to back off. Even though it wasn't a tackle-related injury, he kind of made everything a little bit more conservative, I guess, for the last couple of weeks of spring football.
Well, that happens at times. You know, sometimes, you know, you need to have a healthy team, and you say, oh, no, and that's a shocking type of injury, and you don't want to have any more of those, because mentally it really does, it's an emotional letdown to the entire team, including yourself as a coach. You're such a great kid. You hate to see kids like this who are willing to make a move and be a part of your program and do what's the best for the team get injured like that. So, you know, in fact, I ran into one of the kids at the spring game I was at the other day. He's a doctor now. And I said, Keith, I said, I remember the day you were hurt out here. And he says, Coach, how can you remember that? I say, let's walk over and I'll show you the spot on the field it was. And he says, how can you remember that? I said, because I was so concerned of your injury, I can remember all of that. It was a career-ending injury, and I'll never forget that. So certain things bother you mentally, and you say, you know, we've accomplished enough. Let's stay in group work. Let's hit individually, and we'll come back in the fall when we're healed up and ready to go. And that has a real emotional effect on coaches because they love their players. They love their players they coach, and they don't want to see them get hurt. And no one knows the feeling, unless you're a coach or a parent, when a player goes down. Unless you've played the game or coach, it's a terrible feeling that goes through you. When you look into the eyes of a kid that's done everything you've asked him to do all season or whatever, and you see him injured like that, it's just horrible, horrible. So I think that had a part of why he decided we've had enough.
Well, speaking of injuries, we do have another question on injuries, more of a general question. Here's this one.
Hey, Ryan, it's Miguel. I've got a question for Coach Harvey Hyde. Out of all the injuries that USC had for spring, which one is the most concerning for him, and what is his thoughts, you know, heading into fall camp, you know, as in the team-wise, you know? Thank you very much, and fight on.
Well, thank you very much for your question. I think the number one injury I was concerned with was Robert Woods' injury. But I want to pass this on to our listeners, too. We did have him on the show, and if you weren't listening to our broadcast of the spring game, we asked Robert during the scrimmage. He was on, and we said, Robert, how do you feel? He said, I really feel good. And we asked him if this was a real game, the opening game of the year against the University of Hawaii, would you play today? And his answer was absolutely. So for the people that are worried about his rehab and how he feels, it is positive. It is positive. So that's one that I was real concerned with, and to hear he's ready to go. Now he's got to get back in shape a little bit. But what did he have to prove? He didn't have to prove anything. It gave him a chance for Flournoy and Blackwell and these other players to get some turns and get better. That was the smartest thing that Coach Lane Kiffin did. Let him rest. Let him rehab. Keep him out of it. He doesn't need to prove anything. He got beat up. Whenever you catch 14 passes in one game, I mean, you're taking some shots, and you're returning punts, and you're returning kickoffs. His body needs to mend. So that was one I was real concerned with. Of course, when Trey Madden went down, I was real concerned about that. I'm concerned about every type of injury. A coach is concerned about eligibility and injuries. When my academic advisor would come in and say, Coach, we might lose this guy, I would say, we can't lose this guy. And he'd say, Coach, every time I come in here, you say we can't lose this guy. And that's exactly how I feel injury-wise and academically. We can't lose anybody to injuries or academically. You take these kids in, you forecast when they should play. You want them to graduate from college. You want them to mature mentally and physically. So, you know, a coach loves his players. So every single injury that happened out there, if I was Coach Kiffin or that staff, I'm concerned with. So when you talk about Telfer, you talk about these kids that got injured this spring, I'm concerned about all of them. The tight ends have got to get back. The kid, Toban Harris, has got to come back. All these guys that have been injured with little nagging injuries, they got to come back. You got to have all your players ready. It's like an army. You got to have the Coast Guard. You got to have the Army. You got to have the Marines. You got to have the Navy. You got to have the Air Force. You got to have them all ready when you go to war.
And, you know, and right now or over the spring, USC didn't have everyone ready. The Trey Madden thing that, you know, we talked about, obviously that was a big deal. It was one of the biggest stories of spring when he switched over to running back and to lose him for the whole year. I guess now going forward, Coach, I mean, you know, having Robert Woods, at least there was like a Marquise Lee there. You know, there's a Curtis McNeil there, but he's been kind of getting banged up quite a bit. He does bounce back, though. He seems to get right back in the game all the time. I mean, there could be some injuries where depth is a concern, like a George Uko. There's pretty much no one left with experience in the middle of the defensive line, or a Curtis McNeil, like we talked about. I mean, there's some thin positions on this team where an injury in the fall could really be devastating.
There always is. There always is. There's always a drop-off, but then you've got to remember you've always have to have someone ready to step up and play. You can't look at, you know, you look at your great players, and to be good, you got to be lucky. And good teams make their luck. You know, your ball's got to roll the right way. You can't have injuries. You got to play. You got to get breaks. You can't drop passes. You can't fumble the ball. You can't miss tackles. You got to take advantage of opportunities. You can't miss field goals. You know, you got to be lucky to be great. Part of being good is being lucky, but I think great teams make their luck. Like, when you watch great teams play, you always think, man, was it? They always get the breaks. They get the breaks because they make their breaks. So, you know, yes, there'll be some slim pickings on some positions, but you got to be ready to play. You know, Leonard Williams got to move in there and play. Or Anton Woods has got to come up and say, I'll take his place, coach. And you got to have somebody. I don't want to see anybody get hurt. I don't want to see anybody not there willing to give their 100%. But it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's unfortunate, but it happens. But other guys have got to learn to step up and play as a bigger body, a faster body, to take the spot of the person that's not there.
Well, let's switch it up a little bit, Coach. And I wanted to talk about the upcoming NFL draft. It's only a few days away. And I guess it's kind of a mixed bag sometimes, Coach, where if, you know, USC's definitely been putting guys in the NFL for years and years and tons of guys. And sometimes it's a mixed bag where you say, wow, that USC had 5 first-round draft picks or something. Well, is that good for the team next year? Right now, looks like probably 2 first-round draft picks, and then we're not sure where some of the other guys are going to go. What are your thoughts on that, Coach? When you want to see you know, the school that you root for or the school that you follow put a bunch of guys in the NFL draft, but it also means that those are guys that are going to need to be replaced when you're talking about playing on Saturdays in the fall.
Well, I like to see kids have their dream come true. Your dream come true is to play on Friday, then Saturday, then on Sunday. And have an opportunity to be a number one draft choice or be a 5-star coming out of high school, that didn't happen to many kids. And to have that opportunity, I think it's completely fabulous. To be able to go to camp as a free agent, I think that's absolutely fabulous. But you've had an opportunity to say you had your chance, even if it was a drink of water in a pro camp, you can always say, I tried out or had an opportunity to play for a team. I think that's a dream come true for any young man that's out there. As far as losing kids early, to me, it's hard to do, but you have to swallow it. Because when you have great players and you get great players, you know they're going to have that opportunity of coming out early. When you have great classes, that's when it's even harder on you. If you have 4 or 5 come out early, then it's really hard to replace all those great players. But this year, USC was very fortunate. They had 4 players that could have come out early and possibly all been in the first round. I'm not saying they all could have been, but most likely they would have been. T.J. McDonald and also Matt Barkley. They could have had 4 players come out early. So fortunately, 2 decided to stay. The 2 to go out, you want to always wish the best of luck to, because that's the type of player you want to attract to your football program. And if you're a young high school player, you look at that. You look at the number of players that teams put into the pros. You look and say, hey, the left tackles at USC, the history, if you play left tackle or right tackle or linebacker or running back at USC, you got a great chance to get into the NFL. I most recently read where one of the linebackers, I think from Georgia or somewhere in Florida, is interested in USC because he's calling it linebacker U, because of the number of players who have left USC recently and gone into the NFL. So I think that, and I think pro-style quarterbacks look at USC as a chance to play the pro-style offense at USC. So if you're going to get a Max Brown, if you're going to get these type of players, you've got to be ready to know that when they're junior, you can lose them. There aren't too many T.J. McDonalds. There aren't too many Matt Barkleys who come back. So that's part of the game. You have to reload every year. You've got to have depth. You've got to have numbers. You've got to have players who are ready to step up and replace the players that leave.
Well, let's look at the guys. The two players that have the best chance of going in the first round, one's a certain lock, and it seems like Nick Perry's got a good chance too. Matt Khalil and Nick Perry, though, two of the guys that you talked about were junior. So of the senior class, really, there was no first-round draft picks coming out of that. And I think something has to do with the transition between Pete Carroll to Lane Kiffin and the sanctions and all that. So I think there, you know, some of the depth had left already. And but, you know, right now it looks like Matt Khalil, really good shot to go number three to the Minnesota Vikings. What, have you heard anything about that, or what are your thoughts on Matt Khalil and going to the draft?
I haven't heard anything about him, but what you hear about him going to the Vikings, someone asked me about that in Vegas, and I said they're crazy if they don't take him. Whenever you can get a left tackle, you've got to take a left tackle that has that type of ability. You know, the last tackle that Minnesota got that played for years was Ron Yeary. I wonder if they can remember Ron Yeary. Well, if they think of Ron Yeary, you think of Matt Khalil, and you say, we better take this kid. So I think he'll definitely go. I'd be very surprised if they don't take him. In fact, I don't want to say it, they're not very smart. Let's call it that way.
But yeah, it's funny now with the information that comes out there. There's a lot of people that report on the draft. There's certain guys you like to follow. I mean, you can follow them on Twitter. All the different networks have stuff. I love the NFL Network coverage. I think they do a really good job. But there seems to be disinformation kind of coming out there. And in this year, for sure, there seems to be a lot of talk about trading up and trading down and trying to get different guys out there. But it'd be interesting. The Vikings talked about the Vikings maybe coming to L.A., and I guess that was falling apart or whatever. But for Khalil to go to the Vikings, and then if they had moved back to Los Angeles, I thought that would have been a great storyline.
It would have been. But, you know, you don't really have a choice, and you've got to be happy wherever you're drafted or have a free agency or a chance to play. As a free agent, sometimes it's better to be a free agent than it is to get drafted in the last round. But you have an opportunity to pick a team rather than get drafted by a team. You have a chance to have a choice of taking a look at a roster and saying where I have the best chance of making it or playing special teams or being a backup. So you don't really care where you go. You're very happy you have a chance to go and get that experience of playing in the NFL. I know Nick Perry will go in the first round, and I know Khalil will go in the first round. It's just how high you go in the first round, because the reason we're talking about that is because of the dollar figures in the first round, depending on what round you go. Otherwise, they're both going in the first round. So it all comes down to the opportunity of playing in the NFL and how much money you're going to make.
So you do think Perry's going to go in the first round. Do you think he's going to be able to make that transition from college to the NFL?
I certainly do. He's got great talent. In fact, last year he got better and better as the season went along. He became a dominant player, and I think he'll play in the NFL. I certainly do.
Well, there's a few other guys that are out there. It's kind of a big drop-off, I guess you could say, Coach. People will grade Khalil obviously very high and Nick Perry very high. Then after that, there's a lot of questions, and I think the highest rated player, depends who you talk to, could either be, it's usually Dejon Harris, who kind of rejuvenated his career when Ed Orgeron came back to the team. He was kind of a forgotten guy that was never really in the mix, and then when Ed Orgeron comes back, Harris comes in and steps up, and you know, he's 6'3", 306 pounds. You know, he's got a chance to slip in there somewhere and do some good things for a team.
Well, I think Harris will make the NFL. I really do. I watched him at the Combine. He wasn't the best at the Combine, but he certainly was as good as many at the Combine. You know, you've got to find defensive tackles. You've got to find guys that can play in the middle. And Dejon Harris can play. If he continues to work on his strength and his speed and plays hard, he'll have a shot. And I think maybe he might not start, but he'll make a roster in the NFL. I really believe he will. You know, USC has had great success with defensive tackles in the NFL. If you look around the league, there's a lot of defensive tackles playing in the NFL from USC.
Yeah, certainly, Coach. And Christian Thomas is another guy that could go in there and make – I'm not sure. He might be one of those free agent guys. Maybe he slips in there late. But I think he was a popular player while at USC and a hard worker. We'll see if that it becomes, you know, the fruits of his labor and you can see him playing on Sunday someday.
He may. You never know. It depends where you are, at the right place, the right time. If that team suffers an injury or something happens, you've got to be ready to play. And it makes a difference. He probably will be a free agent, and it might be as best to his benefit him to do that, where he can find a place where he can go and play himself into a position. You just got to it's all timing, Ryan. It's all timing. Being at the right place at the right time and having the right opportunity where you can step up and they need you and you're there.
One of the more interesting players, I think, would be Rhett Ellison, who, very unselfish, an extremely hard worker, and you know his dad has been involved a lot, and you saw his football playing career, but comes in and you know was a tight end. The team needed a fullback, and he slips over there and plays fullback, ends up going to the combine as a fullback, so it was kind of interesting for that. I thought he would go as a tight end, and he's listed on draft boards as a fullback, but what do you think for Rhett Ellison? I mean, it just seems like a shame if like a position switch late in his career would set him back a little bit.
Well, it has set him back a little bit. You know, he's one of those tweeners. Now, don't get me wrong. He's done exactly what he's been asked to do at USC. He was a tight end and was asked to play fullback to give them an additional threat as far as a receiver and a blocking tight end. And he did that. But he probably did lose some opportunities as far as working on his size and blocking. And at the combine, I was very surprised they played him at fullback because he's just not, doesn't feel natural there. I mean, that's where he's playing, but I can just tell he didn't feel natural there. I think he's a little bit too tall for a fullback as far as getting down under people to block or to carry the football in the NFL if you need to carry the football. He would be a good receiver as far as a tight end or out in the flat in a one-back offense. He's a tweener right now and deciding and having to make a decision of what position he's going to play and what best that his abilities will give a team somewhere in the NFL. Now, if he was to go to New England, the Patriots, they'd find a place for him. Bill Belichick find a place for people that can play. He's got more people playing there that no one thought could play than anywhere in the world. Depends where he goes on how he's utilized. Because you've got to go somewhere where someone can take the talent that you bring them and let them utilize your talent on the field. And that's going to be key for Ellison.
One last thing for you, Coach. A couple of five-star players coming out of high school, Chris Galippo and Mark Tyler, both hoping to get drafted over this weekend. What are your thoughts on those guys?
Well, I like both those kids. I really do. I like both those kids. And it's hard when you know the kids to talk about the kids, because I know Chris personally. I don't know Tyler personally, but I've followed his career since he was at Oak Christian High School and know his dad. I don't know what to say on this. You've caught me. Well, I don't know what to say.
Sorry. Wow, Coach, I don't think I've ever done that to you before, 218 episodes.
You have. What I mean, Ryan, is I want them both to have that opportunity. I want them back. I think Tyler's got to work on his speed and his endurance. He's got to really get himself in top shape. I mean great shape. But he hasn't run the 40 times really that has impressed anybody in the spring as far as the combine or pro day. In those type of situations, yet at SC, he did what he was asked to do. To step up to the next level, the competition is so competitive that you got to be able to do it all. So, again, it's the conditioning he's in, the speed he's in. He doesn't get hurt. He's with the right team, and we'll see what happens. Galippo is a great kid, a great leader. He's a kid you want on your team. I would want him on my team. He might not be the fastest or the biggest or the strongest, but I would want to find a place for him on my team because he's that type of leader. He's smart. He's played. He started. He's the type of guy a coach will sit there when it's time to cut a kid, and you look at him and say, this kid could play special teams for us. This kid I want on our team because he'll never be late to a meeting. He'll be a leader. He'll be there when we need him. And I think that's one thing that Chris has going for him, is he's a yes sir, no sir type of kid that I'd want on my team. And that's the way I look at both of them. They've got to really step up and play. Now, you just don't put people on your team. But they've got to be where it comes down where they can contribute to a team in some way where someone wants to keep them.
I guess the good thing, Coach, is even if they don't get drafted, like you mentioned about free agency, they're certainly good enough to be – they're going to get signed with somebody.
Yeah.
And then they'll have a chance in camp to show what they can do. And it's really about being in the right place at the right time. I'm sure there's plenty of NFL players that didn't have as much talent as other guys, but they were put in a great position and they thrived. And I'm sure there's guys that were really talented that were put in bad positions and their careers faltered for us. I mean, it's there's some luck involved. Just like you talked about having a good season, there's some luck involved. There's some luck involved with the NFL draft and free agency process as well.
It's all put together. It's always at the right place at the right time. And, you know, before we go, I want to mention this because I don't know how much time you're going to give me today. I write a column in the Mountain Views News, and I used, when I closed the column, my last column last week was on the review of spring practice at USC. I used your term. I closed it by saying, our 75 is better than your 85. And so many people have asked me, what did I mean by that? And Ryan, I don't know if you started that term, but you have that on a T-shirt, and I think that's a great slogan. I really do.
Well, thanks, Coach. Yeah, you can. It was on the Peristyle, and there was a lot of different talk about that, and we made a T-shirt for it. You know, it was on USCFootball.com. You can go to R75 or BetterThanYour85.com. I know it's kind of long, but that's really what the shirt says. So this is going to be the ultimate year for that, Coach. 75 scholarship players versus 85 scholarship players. If they go out and beat everybody on their schedule, it really proves that R75 are better than your 85.
I tell you, I would be as a head coach, you know the way I am emotionally, I would be talking about that all the time. And I'd be punching my guys, telling them, hey, you guys are better than any 85 in the country. We don't need 85. We need 75 guys who want to really get after it. And I like that saying. I don't know if you created that saying or whoever created that, but it's a great, great, great emotional type of way of motivating.
That's ours, Coach. Yeah, we came up with it. So it was fun. And, you know, there was a lot of discussion on the Peristyle on USCFootball.com about different little slogans and stuff. And that one popped up, and we just ran with it, and there we are. So, yeah, we got to get you one of those shirts, Coach.
Well, okay. Okay. I'll call in and ask myself a question.
All right. Great. All right. Well, Coach, thanks very much for coming on. We went a little long. I know we had some extra coverage to talk about the draft, but thanks for spending the extra time with us, Coach. We always appreciate it.
Ryan, thank you very much. In fact, you can hear the phone ringing in the background. It's time for me to go back to work.
Get back to work, Coach, and thanks again, everyone else. We'll be back in 30 seconds talking with Dan Weber.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287. 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater.
We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. We're going to talk a little bit more USC football with Dan Weber, USCFootball.com beat writer, covering the team as always. Dan, how you doing, man? What's been going on?
Well, not much. I tell you, I do get emails from guys just saying, USC fans who say things like, can you believe 2 years ago where USC was, a year ago, and now where they are. And I just saw some of our guys had gone round and round with Sporting News and Matt Hayes, who's their national college football. I don't know if you remember, we had guys who posted a series of their emails back and forth, and they were really unhappy with Matt Hayes. And kind of, you know, they thought sort of an anti-USC spin on things. And I just saw, you know, the other day that he posted his top 25, or Sporting News posted their top 25 college football players coming back for this year. And USC is 1-2 with Matt Barkley number one, and then and Marquise Lee number two.
Wow.
Robert Woods is number nine overall. So here Matt Hayes, this somebody who USC people haven't been very happy with. He has three USC football players among the top nine in rankings in the country. I think have things ever turned around? Yeah, maybe.
Pretty impressive. Yeah, I guess it started maybe with the NCAA allowing Josh Shaw to actually play right away. I think that was kind of a wake-up call. Like, USC fans were saying, huh, there was a ruling that actually went in USC's favor, and now there's more national media catching on where, you know, it doesn't seem like people are saying, well, there's not going to be any depth. The sanctions are really hurting this team. Now people are really putting them in the same categories as the Alabamas and LSUs of the world.
It's almost inexplicable. I mean, there is no, as Lane said last week, said, I don't know if I'd pick us to be number one. He said, I don't know if I'd pick a team with 10 fewer scholarships than everybody else has to be number one. But, well, people are doing that. That's just who would have ever thought that? I don't know that anyone at USC, we never will know what deep down, you know, Lane was thinking, or Ed Orgeron, or whatever, but it's just hard to imagine anyone would have ever thought USC would be sitting in this position, you know, as we finish up April of this year, would be in this kind of a position where it's just assumed by everybody in college football that USC could be there at the end of next year in Miami. It's just, you know, so much to go between now and then.
Right.
But it's hard to get there if people don't think you even have a chance to get there. I mean, you've got to almost be in the discussion, or you're not really going to be in the mix to get there. And that USC is not only in the discussion, but where it is in the discussion is really it's kind of stunning. I mean, it's a potential for just one of those seasons that almost doesn't seem true. It's like, you know, too good to be true, or too amazing almost to be true. It really says some things about what's happened here in the last couple of years that maybe even we who see it every day, you can't believe that they've made so many good calls, good decisions. So many kids have done, you know, so many things that are really special. It's you know, again, got to play the games, got to be ready for them. Everybody's going to be coming after you. But to be in this position is pretty amazing.
I think it was a genius move too by Lane Kiffin when he would say that. Where, how could you pick USC number one? We're fewer than 10, you know, 10 fewer scholarships than everyone else. It's almost like one of those Lou Holtz moments where he goes into the game and say, "Oh, we don't have a chance." And he knows that they're as talented as anyone in the country, and they have a great shot at doing something special this season. Now, certainly, they go out and lose a couple games early, and you know, just, you know, maybe being in line for a good bowl, but not in that national championship picture. And I don't think anyone would hold them to, you know, as him at fault for that. I mean, I think that there's built-in excuses going in there, but he knows that if he does put something special together, it's a little extra recognition, because not only did he turn the program around that quickly, but he did it with basically one hand tied behind his back.
Well, I mean, it tells you how many, and this is my next thing I'm writing, is all the good calls that Lane has made. You know, like the top 10, just going to try to do some top 10 lists this week, and one of the top 10 lists are the 10 best calls that Lane Kiffin's made over the last couple of years. Because you look back, and, you know, there may be, something in a game here or there, but if you look at the overall development of the program, he's made an awful lot of good calls and an awful lot of things that have played out and decisions about people and coaches and just in general the strategy of you know, competing with the NCAA sanctions and all of that, that when you look back at it, you think, wow, you know, you can't even second guess them. Their hindsight, they're as good in hindsight as they were, you know, when he made them. And maybe he doesn't always get the credit, you know, for being able to do that. But when you look back at it now, you can't be where they are now, having not had, you know, almost no missteps. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
What are the, I guess maybe some of the concerns that some of the fans have expressed, at least on Twitter or on the message boards? I mean, there were guys missing. There were certainly pieces not all together. Spring ball, there was a lot of guys injured. There was a certain level of inconsistency in the play, especially on the offensive side of the football, pretty much throughout spring ball. Are there any concerns there since USC did start off so slow last year on offense? It was basically Matt Barkley to Robert Woods. They can't really afford to do that with the Stanford game coming up, third game of the season. Any concerns there, Dan, of kind of what you saw in spring and them being able to you know, turn a switch on at the beginning of fall camp or the beginning of the season?
No, actually, I think it's a good thing. I mean, I think for this team with this level of maturity, with, you know, say if you look at you know, Matt Barkley and Robert Woods as your main cogs in that, I almost think it was a good thing that they could kind of take a little bit of a pause in the spring, let other people, you know, get chances. It's sad that George Farmer and Buck Allen, probably the two you would have liked to have seen get a chance to do more individually, and then the Trey Madden injury, just of all the things, that's, you know, obviously it's unbelievable how good a decision that was and would have been had he stayed eligible. I mean, he stayed healthy, because I don't think we can even tell people how good he potentially was going to be. I mean, we've said it, but it just still, you're going to have to see it. And you know, that's the advantage of recruiting the kinds of players USC is recruiting. They're recruiting multi-talented, multi-positional guys who are athletes first, maybe, and that is, you know, extends the number of 75 scholarships. You've got 75 scholarships, but you've got a number of guys that can play both ways or several positions. You're playing with more than that, and you're playing with maybe better athletes at those positions. Having the Abe Markowitzes, for example, you know, having a Red Ellison last year, those kinds of I think decisions have really helped USC, you know, tremendously. And yet, a decision that, you know, Marquise Lee, nope, you're not a safety. You're a wide receiver, and that's where you're going to be for us. Also, exactly right on the money. I mean, some you want to be able to do a couple of things, some you don't. Tony Burnett, you'd like to have him, you know, he's at his third position in, you know, 2.5 years. And, you know, every one of those moves seems like, you know, or at least where he is now, seems like the place he needs to be, and USC needs him to be. So we'll see how this all goes. But I think the chances for the youngest players to get as much playing time as they could in the spring was the most important thing. You know, they weren't playing anybody in the spring, didn't have any games. I think it was maybe more important for the three new coaches to become part of a coaching team and to get a chance to do more real coaching in the spring. I think that was more important than anything that, approximates, say, a game situation. I think it was fine that they didn't even try to play a game on on the spring game. Their games will come in, you know, September, and with the veteran leadership I think they've got, I think they'll be fine.
Well, just so for fans' sake, we know that, you know, USC spring ball ended last weekend. I was actually down, I think it was down at the beach this weekend, and people ask me, you know, that people don't know exactly what I do all the time. They think that when the season ends, like, I don't do anything all summer. Like, no, yeah. It's pretty busy all year round. There's always stuff going on. But they want to know, like, kind of what are the players doing now? Like, oh, they got the whole summer off. I'm like, well, not really. I mean, you're just not allowed to practice, but maybe kind of give people an update of what's on the schedule now for these players.
Well, I think what's kind of fun is this is the biggest group of track guys, you know, we've had. And, you know, they get to conclude the season with some, USC UCLA meet, which is, you know, that's a lot of fun. And the Pac-12 meet, a guy like Abe Markowitz hasn't been really throwing the shot or the discus. I think he may be throwing both, and he just stepped back and hadn't thrown a discus for how long, and I think he's going to get a chance to do both. And he actually, now I don't know what the standards are in terms of qualifying for the Olympics, but as a citizen of Samoa, he has the ability, if he hits the minimum standards, to throw either one of those, and I'm guessing shot more of an opportunity than a discus, you know, to compete in the Olympics, which would be, you know, just something completely out of the blue for this summer. But also, you've got the athletes' graduation coming up in, I think, May 10th, which is always kind of neat because there will be players for next year who will be graduating in May, like an Abe, probably Matt Barkley. I think, you know, all the guys that are going to graduate within the next semester get to be part of that athletes' graduation, and that's a great ceremony, and I, you know, would recommend it to people. They have it at Galen Center, and we'll do some advance on it before it gets here. But I thought it was a terrific day for the USC athletes last year. You know, with all the football players making it and getting their degrees, and I think they're pretty much on track with most of the guys this year. And some of the guys will be ahead of the pace. But and then you've got the right after the graduation, you've got the 16 guys heading down to Haiti for 5 days to bring supplies and build houses and that kind of thing with the Barkley family. So I think they've got a pretty full plate. And then after that, they'll, you know, get back in end of May, early June, and they can start getting ready for summer ball. Then they'll start, you know, working out in the summer. But this is probably a kind of a good little break to finish up academically and exams and all that for the spring semester, and then move on. But they're probably, once they get back into it, there won't be any breaks. This will be 6 or 7 months of sustained you know, hard work and attention, and Matt Barkley keeps talking about, you know, they're ready for the onslaught of publicity. I mean, if people remember the 2005 season when, for example, ESPN practically set up a Howard Jones Field Bureau with live reports every day, who knows if that won't return again, you know, with ESPN, you know, getting the USC radio contract and all that. So I think this is a well-deserved and well-timed break for these guys, but it's not going to last too long.
Yeah, and the May's kind of a weird month as far as covering the team because, you know, the finals are coming up and the players kind of take a little bit of time off. They don't get much time off the whole year. We do a lot of recruiting coverage. Gerard will be on later this week for a Trojan Blast recruiting podcast. We've got a lot of questions already for him. If you have more, you can send them podcast@uscfootball.com. But the coaches are out there doing their May evaluations. They can go out and visit campuses, and there's a lot of camps and stuff coming up. So there's more offers, and you know, we expect to see more commitments and things like that happening. So a lot of happening on the recruiting front. But I guess when it really gets interesting, Dan, is when you said, like, June, when they start off the summer workouts and stuff again, they'll be working out, they'll throw the football around, and we'll be down there for that. But once the high school graduations start, all of those guys from the class of 2012, they start to show up on campus, and we get to check them out. So that's kind of one of the more fun parts of the year, I think, when you're covering this team, seeing the brand new guys for the first time.
Yeah, I think you look at a handful of you know, what does Nelson Aguilar, you know, look like, you know, running, you know, or what's he look like with a football in his hand? Watch, and you know, everybody now will probably say, I want to see him throw the ball. You know, we think he can catch it, we think he can run with it. Now, if he's going to be a designated Wildcat guy, how much they'll use the Wildcat, we don't know. But, you know, let's see what kind of, and we've all heard about how much leadership he has and all that. I think everybody's going to want to see Leonard Williams and say, you know, how big, how fast, how, you know, what do we pick up on him? You're going to want to see the three offensive linemen that are coming in, you know, how much do they really weigh? How tall are they? You know, how do they move their feet? That kind of thing. That gets kind of exciting, actually, the first chance you get to see in person with the with their older teammates and all that, because you're always looking to say, you know, this guy gonna play, you know, and several of them probably will. And that's fun. You're right. That's a kind of a fun time to see those guys for the first time, you know, on the field, you know, with their teammates and moving around out there. There's a lot you can learn. One of the things I always like to watch is I just like to watch their feet. How good are their feet? How fast? You know, how do they handle their feet? How do they, you know, pick them up and move them and pivot on them and all the little things that you can see that. No matter how good the video is, you kind of need to see him in person for that kind of evaluation. So you're right. That's kind of a big deal and a fun time.
Well, we did have a question mentioning something that you were just talking about. It's Mark and La Quinta, and you were talking about that Haiti trip where after graduation, 16 USC football players. It might be 17 now. Didn't they add Josh? I don't know. A bunch of guys.
I think he was number 16, but we're going to recount him again. But they added him, yes.
Okay, yeah, so maybe 15, 16, 17, something along those lines. But Mark wanted to know, I know it's not a reason, this is not a reason for the trip, but can you comment on how many times you think Larry Scott and Mark Emmert will use the Trojans trip as an example of what is right about college athletics? I can see it now as part of the Pac-12 TV broadcast.
Well, it maybe should be. I keep having this moment of we're talking about the Pac-12 Media Day, July 24th, somewhere in L.A., the last vestige of the Pac-12 in L.A., I'm guessing, until maybe if USC pulls it off and they have the championship football game here. But you'd almost like to ask Larry Scott, Larry, have you ever had second thoughts about, well, your little thing you did with Matt Barkley during the year where you reprimanded him for the things he said about Vontez Burfict that probably should have been said for the previous 3 years by every coach at Arizona State? He chose not to say anything about that poor kid. And that have you ever approached Matt and said, you know, Matt, I probably shouldn't have done that. You're probably the best thing we got going for us in this conference. And I kind of wish I hadn't done that. I think I may actually ask Larry that question at Media Day just to see if he's ever had a chance to sit down with Matt Barkley and say, you know, I probably, what I said there in reprimanding you was probably worse than anything you could have possibly said about Vontez Burfict, since, of course, what you said about Vontez Burfict was exactly correct. And wasn't meant in any kind of a mean-spirited way. But that's a great question. I think if I were the NCAA and I were Pac-12, I would be touting what USC is doing. Problem you've got there is that the NCAA is kind of painting themselves in a corner the way they've so unfairly dealt with USC that it would probably bring people to say, well, wait a minute, if Matt Barkley's a great guy and Paul Dees turned out to be not maybe such a good guy and he kind of represents the NCAA and Matt Barkley represents USC, doesn't that make the NCAA look kind of bad? And if I'm Mark Emmert, I'm the head of the NCAA because I've specialized all my career, all my life in getting into situations where I can't get blamed for anything. I'm the ultimate bureaucrat. You know, I went through every university and every conference trying to build a resume so I could, you know, get a job like that. And I probably wouldn't have moved up the ladder if I'd ever said a word that made anybody look at me and say, wait a minute, did you guys screw up? So while that's a wonderful idea, I'm not thinking the NCAA or the Pac-12 is going to take advantage of it, because it would, you know, put some light on some of the things that they've done with regard to USC over the last couple of years that probably don't shed much, you know, don't make them look very good.
All right, and then we have one more question for you, Dan. This was something to do with what we'll talk about on Thursday, where Matt Khalil could likely be the number 3 pick in the NFL draft. We'll see. He's going to be a high pick somewhere. But here's a question about Matt Khalil.
Hey, guys. This is Joe from Virginia. Can you tell me why Matt Khalil did not win the Outland Trophy Award? I know Barrett Jones was a really good tackle for Alabama, but we were highly ranked, and Matt Khalil did not allow a sack the whole season. In fact, he led a lot of our rushing attack. Please answer it. Thanks for the podcast.
Well, really good question. I actually talked to some people who went to the College Football Award Show and were talking about the Outland Award, and they said, they said Bear Jones looked like Matt's little brother. They said, God, there was no comparison. They said, athletically, if you stood the two guys next to one another, and if you looked at their highlights, they weren't even in the same, they weren't playing the same game. I mean, it was, but, you know, I mean, Matt Khalil didn't even make all the All-American teams. I mean, think about that. I mean, I was trying to think that we maybe ought to do a study of the All-America teams he didn't make. And look at the voters and just request that none of them ever be allowed to vote again. I mean, it was just, what a joke. But that's the way it is. That's the way, you know, that's the way it goes in some of those, you know, deals where they, you know, where you stick together. And most of the people, you got to understand, most of these people don't know anything about which lineman is better than which other lineman. And it's kind of a pack, you know, herd mentality. And they vote for the guy from Alabama, you know, because they put up what? The Alabama offense put up what? 3 points on the LSU during the regular season. So how could you not vote for one of those talented offensive, you know, linemen there? But that was the thing I got back, though, from people who had been at the at that awards. They said, if you looked at the two players in the next one, and they said, for example, there was no doubt among the players who was the better player. Who was a better athlete? Who was a better offensive lineman? It was said it was not like, you know, that Matt Khalil was like wishing people would know, you know, what he did or how good he could be. But you're right. That's just the way, you know, you see Alabama, and this kid, you know, was their kind of go-to guy on the offensive line. But as to, you know, any comparisons, none whatsoever. And that's just the way there's a. That's why I wouldn't get all that caught up in those award shows, all that much of those particular awards. You know, they don't all mean that much. If you get one, great. If you don't, no big deal.
Yeah, there've been a lot of USC tackles over the years, a great offensive lineman that did not win the award and then would be picked, you know, in the top 10 in the draft and have amazing NFL careers. I know there's been a topic on the Peristyle where USC doesn't do a great job of promoting some of their best, like position players like that, where you want linemen or, you know, sure, the Heisman stuff is kind of like forefront in the media, but like Matt Khalil, they'll talk about him as being a top pick in the NFL draft, but we didn't see a whole lot of promotion for him winning any of those awards. So maybe it's something that USC could try to do to get that out there, because like you said, the writers don't know, and the people that vote don't know all that much about it. It's basically what you tell them to do. So if you tell them, hey, this is the best offensive lineman in the country, then they have to take that into consideration. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, and I know USC, and I kind of like the attitude where you let their play and the teams play, and you let it come out of that, and you don't try to make it the focus of what you're doing where, you know, they don't put the names on the jerseys. I love that. That's just the best thing in the world, and it's all about team. And I think the ultimate determination is 2 years ago, number one offensive lineman was Teron Smith from USC. This year, the number one offensive lineman is going to be Matt Khalil. And where it really matters, you know, in terms of their whole, you know, lifetime and their career and the, you know, the rewards they get from doing what they've done at that level and the reward that USC gets. Because let me tell you what, nothing is more important in terms of USC's, kind of rebirth, I guess you would say, as the an absolute elite, very top of the list college football power, is that kids nationally, prospects nationally, know that there is no better place to go if you want to get to the NFL and be developed and to the, you know, the ultimate in terms of your talent, that USC does the best job. And if you would say what combination of education and atmosphere and history and program and all of that, the academics with the athletics, what's the best place for you? And you almost, you know, the awards and things like that are almost secondary. USC, and I think maybe it's one of the things that sustained USC so well through this time is nobody puts more guys into the NFL. Nobody puts more guys highly rated, highly picked into the NFL than USC does. And that ultimately is where, you know, where these kids are, you know, looking, and ultimately it's the evaluation of the program. And I guess if a guy like a Matt Khalil had his choice, and you got a choice of being the top offensive lineman in the draft or winning the Outland Award, I don't think there's any question about, you know, which one he'd rather have.
All right, Dan. Well, we really appreciate you coming on the show and talking some USC football with us. We'll get you on next week. We can evaluate where these guys went in the draft and how that all breaks down. We'll see if Matt Khalil does end up going number three, or if the Vikings pass on him, or if there's a bunch of trades. Who knows? There could be a lot of crazy stuff that happens, but we'll check back with you.
Yeah, I think Matt's in kind of one of those places where there's, you know, there's some legitimately real intrigue, and it'll make it fun to watch. I mean, I think for USC fans, it's almost always an interesting day and fun to watch, but I think this year maybe even more so because we really don't know.
All right. Well, Dan, thanks again. Really appreciate you coming on the show, and everyone else, thank you very much for tuning in. You have been listening to the Peristyle Podcast.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.